What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
We welcome you to the final regular season, I guess, if you will, edition of Meet Me as Usual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptow, C70 at the bat, at C70. With me is Alan Medlock from Red Dirt Red Bird and a Medlock One on the Twitters. Cardinals season ended yesterday. The meaningful part of their season ended Saturday, and that's fairly remarkable given where they were a week ago Sunday when they had a game and a half lead on the Rockies for that last wild card spot. And granted, the Rockies then went on a run where they didn't actually lose any games, but the Cardinals didn't win any of those either, and that's the problem. You know, Alan, you look at three with the Brewers, you look at three with the Cubs. The only one they win is the 2-1 game with Miles Michaelis, which, again, wind blowing in with a lot of fly balls in the air. I hope Michaelis was planning for that, because otherwise that could have been an ugly game if the wind had shifted. You see that, and that's probably the worst week the Cardinals had all year long. You know, is there any kind of real reason for that, do you think?
You know, it sounds like I'm making excuses, but I totally think that they had run out of steam. Mm-hmm. You know, we pointed this out. I think that a lot of the young pitching, you saw a lot of walks, you know, and what I thought really stood out is a lot of the two strike hits. They just couldn't finish anybody off. I know it sounds made up, and it's not necessarily made up, but I know it sounds like it's just an excuse, but I just don't think they had much left in the tank. And another thing in this last week, we may be looking at the best team in the National League, which I thought was the Dodgers was in, but everything is falling in place for the Brewers right now. You know, so that, you know, that maybe something else to consider. But yeah, I think that was probably a lot of the case, is that I just don't know how much they had left, and they were playing on when you see, you know, three or four of the regulars, Schilt came out and said that they're definitely not going to play. You could tell they were playing pretty wounded.
Yeah, and again, you start. I don't know that any of it made any difference, but then, you know, this is the kind of discussion we've had for a long time, and I'm sorry, because I think some of this we said on Gateway last night, so if you listen to both shows, you may get a little bit of a repeat, but, you know, where do you draw the line that 100% Patrick Wisdom is not better than Jed Jerko? Is Jed Jerko at 60% better than a healthy Patrick Wisdom? Maybe he is. I don't know. But I also know that there were a significant number of at-bats this week that Jed Jerko just didn't come through in. And whether that was tired, whether that was injury, whether that's just baseball, I don't know. But, you know, what, two or three different, you know, bases loaded situations, and I think the most we ever got out of it, the Cardinals ever got out of it, was a sacrifice fly. A couple other opportunities where a base hit could have, you know, broken the game open or at least brought the Cardinals closer, and it just didn't seem to come through. And again, you could start Patrick Wisdom and he could have struck out in every one of those situations. I'm not saying that that was the wrong choice, but, you know, I guess that's kind of just because we have seen this so much in Cardinals the last few years. You know, where do you say, look, I know Jed Jerko is the guy that got us here, but Jed Jerko is not that same guy now, and I need to run out Patrick Wisdom because we need to win these games. I give credit a lot to Shields for trying to stay consistent and trying to stay with the guys that they got him there, but, you know, you just wonder if, you know, a couple of small changes to somebody that might have been a little healthier might have made a difference.
Yeah, I thought about that a lot. I mean, I think a fresh wisdom. I thought it was kind of funny that we never saw. I thought Munoz was at his best when he was playing third and short. Mm-hmm. You know, had a lot of responsibility, was playing every day, and I thought it was very odd that we didn't see Munoz a lot of third down the stretch. You know, you're right. I mean, you just kind of wonder where if some of the other pieces, the fresher legs, you could obviously tell that these guys were hurt. You know, in Jericho in particular, I thought, because he couldn't really run the bases. But that's a good question. You can't help but wonder, especially when Wisdom does what he did. I mean, he seemed to have hit every chance that he got. So, you know, you wonder if the best pieces were being put together.
Yeah, and I mean, again, there is going to be a learning curve for Mike Shildt, even though he's had some managerial time in the minor leagues. And again, we tend to want a manager to be consistent with what he does versus just randomly trying to play the hot hand, because that's a lot of what Mike Matheny did, right? I mean, he was trying to, you know, sometimes seemed like he was trying to play the hot hand, even when that hot hand had cooled significantly. But you look at games where Munoz, I mean, he really struggled at second base in that last week. In some games, Colton Wong wasn't available. In some games, he was. And you know, like Saturday's game, they did win, but the run that was scored is because Munoz dropped a ball that, you know, you could almost guarantee and put money on the fact that Colton Wong would have caught that ball and made it very easy. You know, I know the lefty was starting, but do you, you know, where do you counteract the, we need the defense, which is, you know, again, that idea that the Cardinals have had that they need to improve their defense, where do you say that that takes over precedence over the lefty-lefty thing? You know, I don't know. And I don't know. I'm not saying that Mike Shildt had the wrong answers. I say those are some interesting questions to ask. And I think you could talk to Mike Shildt and he would say, yeah, I could see that. And this is why I did this. But you could have gone that way and maybe it would have worked. I think that's one of the great things about Shildt is it seems like he's open to a discussion about some moves. But what it boiled down to, I think you're right. I don't know that it made a whole lot of difference what lineup or what moves you made. That first game against the Brewers, they lost 12-4. Nothing was going to change that game. Although, actually, that was a game they were actually kind of close in for until the bullpen got a hold of it. But, you know, again, that was the other thing. Even if you got a lead in some of these games, which they didn't do much of, how confident were you that the bullpen would hold it? And we saw a lot of the same look to the bullpen that we saw back in July. It felt like this last two or three weeks where, and again, they may have been running on fumes, but you just didn't trust anybody, really didn't trust anybody besides Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, we hear a lot of that, of, hey, this looks very similar, and, you know, he was on a hot streak until September, and now there's some, you see a little bit of cracks, but you do kind of wonder just how bad guys were hurting, because he did seem to go to a lot of the same same matchups and same numbers. Like, I look at, like, Hudson had a ton of opportunities late where you see Ponce de Leon didn't. Right. And you just wonder how healthy were the guys in question. And I think that it's not that he kind of went to that. Well, he may not have had any other choice. Mm-hmm. So that's, and I thought about that. I thought about that toward the end. I was like, because you see some of these guys aren't succeeding and you just wonder who's not available and we just don't know it. It's kind of with Hicks. I mean, you kind of can see that he hit the wall, mm-hmm. hit a wall. And, you know, that is what got you there, but you just have to wonder. And then on the Wong, you know, I think that those lefty matchups were an excuse to set him because he wasn't healthy. You know, maybe so.
Yeah, there's something that I think Daniel Ponce de Leon, and you've read probably more than I in the last couple of days, especially today as I've been kind of out, but I don't really ever remember hearing a reason why Daniel Ponce de Leon didn't get used. I mean, I'm looking at his game log here, and he pitched on September 12th against the Pirates. It's the game he started, and, you know, two earned runs in five innings, which is nice. Good, seven strikeouts, great line. And then he didn't pitch again until the last day of the season where he pitches an inning after the game's already out of hand. I don't I mean, is there an injury situation? Is there, because there's really no reason for him to go 17 days without pitching.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It just looked eerily similar to Matheny leaving guys under glass.
Now, in fairness, this one makes more sense. I will say, Luke Weaver didn't pitch after September 15th.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw what Luke Weaver looked like, and that's going to be, as we kind of maybe talk a little bit, start transitioning to talking about, you know, next year's roster and things like that. Luke Weaver's got to be a question, an interesting question to have, because he had some nice moments, but this was not a good year for him overall. After those first two or three starts, it just kind of really went downhill, and it never seemed to get back on track. And I don't know that that's all a fatigue thing, because, like I said, it was most of the year.
Yeah, I agree. It never seemed like he got off track. He was probably the one that I was the most disappointed in this year, because I thought that he was going to have a really big year. I thought it was going to be something not to Flaherty or Michaelis level, but I thought that he would be somewhere along the Walker lines, mm-hmm. of just being a very productive starter, ready to take that next step. You know, he's 2 years out. I felt like he kind of got over the home run bug, but that's the start in Chicago after it was the day game after the snow out. He was lost. It was like they knew what he was throwing, and it never seemed to recover after that. I don't know. It was just complete disappointment for Weaver this year, for me.
Yeah, yeah, you're right, because the first three games of the season, Weaver had a 2.08 ERA. He had struck out 17 batters in 17 innings. We thought, hey, this is great. And then counting that start that you're talking about all the way through the rest of the season, he had a 5.37 ERA. He struck out 104 in 119 innings, a little bit lesser rate. Walked 49, so his K rate was close, a little over 2-1 K to walk rate. Batters had an 819 OPS against him. And I'm not saying that he didn't have some moments in there, but that's a long stretch of games to have a very high ERA. And, I mean, when you start looking at this team, and this is a team, this is what we've said about this team for quite some time, there are so many arms. You have to wonder what Luke Weaver's role is on this team. Mm-hmm. He'd obviously be selling very low to get rid of him, so he's got to have some sort of role, but what is it going to be?
Yeah, that's – and if you think – I've listened to a lot of radio. I've been in the car quite a bit today, and being out of town, the you hear them talking like 8-9 starters that could possibly be available next year, that, you know, it's a wealth of talent. They're ready to go. Weaver's name is never brought up. You know, he's kind of the forgotten man right now. That'll be interesting. I mean, completely to see. I mean, I can't imagine that'd be a Memphis type situation for him, but you're right. I mean, that's, you're selling completely low on that. Now, they could sell low and sell it to the fan base of, hey, this is going to be a better opportunity for the player. But yeah, I don't know what kind of return you can expect out of that. Now, he's a first rounder, if that means anything. But, you know, I'm not sure if it does anymore.
Yeah,
he's in a tough spot. He's really pitched himself into a tough spot with this club.
Yeah, I mean, last year he had a pretty good season in the big leagues, and so you can easily say there's a bounce back. I mean, he's only going to be in his age 25 season next year, so there's still growth there. There's still, I mean, I think that's one of the things that fans are very easy to write a guy off even after a couple of years. You say, oh, he's just never going to make it, which doesn't always happen. I mean, some guys take a little while to develop, and if they see something in Weaver that they like that they just need to tinker with or something, and who knows? Again, as you say, we don't know who was injured. I mean, he didn't pitch after September 15th. Maybe there's an arm issue. Maybe he just had a, you know, whatever they call a dead arm. Maybe it's not anything serious. But you know, again, it's a long time. So hopefully he'll work on his mechanics, he'll do something, and he'll come back to spring and look good. But, I mean, that was this spring, right, that he was so dominant that I know one spring, I can't remember if this year or last year, that he was just like the best pitcher on the staff. And I want to say maybe it was last year instead of this year. I can't remember, but either way, he's going to have another one of those springs, I think, because if Alex Reyes is healthy, if Michael Wacha is healthy, if, you know, you're going to have Miles Michaelis, you're going to have Carlos Martinez, you're going to have Jack Flaherty, there's your five right there. That's not counting, you know, whatever happened with Adam Wainwright, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. You know, that's not counting if they want to try to do Dakota Hudson. That's not talking about Austin Gomber. That's not talking about anything they might do in the offseason to bring in a veteran pitcher. That's a lot of people for him to overcome, but he's got to be better than that to be a reliable bullpen piece. So I don't know what the future holds for Luke Weaver. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's gotten to that point with a first rounder with so much potential. It's funny. I don't. You hear a lot of the Wainwright stuff, and it pushes him further down the line. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, and speaking of, that's where we'll go to next, is Adam Wainwright. You know, there's an article out today. Adam Wainwright wants to pitch next year. The team has talked to him. And that's all they're doing right now. Seeing what he might want to do, seeing, you know, if he wants to. You know, obviously they had to check it if he wanted to pitch, and he does seem to want to pitch next year. I think it's going to be another divisive thing. I mean, we've seen, which just proves that in today's society, everything is divisive. When you can't get behind Adam Wainwright, you know, what can you get behind? But there's going to be that. I mean, there's going to be this argument that he's taking a spot from a young guy, that he doesn't necessarily, you know, we can't really rely on four starts, two of which were iffy. I mean, two of them, both of the ones on the road were four runs and five innings. He had two very good ones at Busch Stadium, so he still has something in the tank, but what is it, and, you know, how much should they be selling on, for, especially with the options that they have? I don't know. I mean, what do you see for Adam Wainwright next year?
I saw enough health to where I don't think it's a bad gamble. You know, and it, like you said, the numbers of – I didn't think the Chicago start on Friday was that bad. It was a little bit of tough luck, and I felt like he ran into that bush once too. But I think that he's done enough. I wouldn't be disappointed to see him brought back. I've got some other theories of why they may need another starter. But you know, no tease or anything. But I just don't think all the guys that we presume are coming back, I'm not convinced are coming back. And I know it's only four starts, and that's probably the four best he's had since really 16. But I think that, I don't think it's all nostalgia. I think he could help, and I think there will be a spot for him.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think he's also got to be open, though, to being next year's Tyson Ross.
Sure.
You know, the guy that comes in the fourth inning with runners on and hopefully can get out of it, which means he's going to have to be sharp most of the time. You know, of course, then there's the argument, why don't you just bring Tyson Ross back, which you could do. And I don't have a problem with that. I liked what Tyson Ross brought. I'm just really happy with how he pitched for the Cardinals. But you got to think he's going to want to be a starter someplace, and the Cardinals are not going to sign him to be a starter. And even if you brought Tyson Ross back, with the way pitching is changing, with the way the rotations are changing, and with so many young arms in that rotation, you could really make the argument for having two guys like that. Guys that, you know, can come in and almost piggyback, you know, and give you that option. I don't know, especially if you wind up running 13 pitchers, which I don't know what they'll run next year, maybe just 12, but even so, five plus those two, and then you get a closer, and, you know, we've kind of proven, unless they go out and get a lefty specialist, they don't have one. And that's an interesting discussion to have about Brett Cecil. But, I mean, it feels a little bit like overkill to have two, but I think there's possibilities, especially if you're willing to use a Wainwright in the seventh, maybe just as a seventh here, and then next time use him for two or three innings, and next time maybe he starts because you need that little gap. I mean, but Adam Wainwright has to be open to that, and Adam Wainwright has to prove that he can do that, and that's kind of a question as well.
Sure. Yeah, sure. That's and I don't know how excited they would be about throwing him back-to-back days, you know, in a possibility like that, or, you know, every three, you know, for short stints. I don't know. You can never have enough pitching. I think they proved that this year. I think that some of that swing spot where I would think it would be tough for them to sign two guys for that possibility, because there's going to be so much overage from the guys that lose out in the rotation or guys that they don't want to send in Memphis. There's going to have to be options there. So I think there's going to be spots to win. And let's be honest, with the bullpen the way that it was, I think that it's all hands on deck, and they're going to see who fits in these roles the best. And that could be any name, really.
Yeah, you're right. And talk about another name that's out in that bullpen and what they might do with that. You know, we all love Jordan Hicks this year. There's no doubt about what he brings to the table. That being said, in his last five appearances, he went 4.2 innings, gave up six runs. I mean, it's 11.57 ERA. September wasn't a whole lot better overall. I mean, because, of course, you factor that in there, too. But he had another outing where he allowed two runs. I mean, he had moments. He had, you know, we remember that game, what was it, against the Dodgers. He came in and struck out three. You know, he had some really good moments, even in September. So it's not like he completely wore out. But what do you do with Jordan Hicks? And I think that's going to be a very interesting question for them to answer. And it's going to form how they approach this bullpen. Because if you're going to say Jordan Hicks is a bullpen guy from now on, and he's going to be in the bullpen, okay. He still needs some development, but okay. But you've kind of closed off him being another major league starter. If you think he wants to be a starter, then he needs to go play in Springfield or something like that next year, because he needs the development time. I think it's going to be difficult for the Cardinals to send him down and let him be a starter anymore. I just don't think they can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I bet for the near future, I think that it's been decided that he is going to be in the bullpen. I don't think they'd take the risk they did last year with the thought of him actually going back to the rotation this soon. You know what I mean? I think it'll probably be closer toward at least this year, and then maybe closer toward arbitration, figuring out what they've got and maybe extending him that way. But I think he'll be a bullpen piece, and I think you probably build from there. I've got some of the ways that I would also like to improve on that, and this is kind of going into another direction, and you can reel me back in. I would like them to take a really hard look at Rosenthal, and just to see if you have those two power arms in the back, and you can get another lefty, and which is a scary proposition because they never seem to work out. But that goes into something we're going to talk about in a little bit about certainty. But then you're looking pretty good. I think you have significantly changed the bullpen and gone with more bullpen pieces that are true bullpen pieces, not just the overage of the Memphis rotation that you had for the majority of the second half of the season.
Yeah, I don't know. I think once if he gets, it's kind of like Rosenthal, you know. Rosenthal was, oh, we're always going to turn him into starter. We'll turn him back into starter. We can do that at some point. And they never did. Because, one, they're used to that flame throwing out of the bullpen. But, two, especially in Jordan Hicks' case, how do you sell that to a fan base? How do you say, we're taking the most electric guy that we had last year, and we're going to take him back to Double-A so he can be a starter. And even though that's maybe the right decision, even though that may be smart for the long run, it's a hard marketing call, and that factors into some of these things sometimes.
Sure.
I'm with you, though. I think Rosenthal's a very interesting person to look at this offseason. He seems, in the videos that he's putting up on Twitter or whatever, it seems like he's throwing hard again, 99 or so. He obviously has the experience, And, you know, I don't know that you trust him with the closer role right out, but you don't really want to trust Jordan Hicks with the closer role right out. Bud Norris seems like he's not coming back. I don't know that for sure, but it seems like he's not. You know, where does that closer come from? You know, maybe they do a closer by committee type of thing and let Hicks and Rosenthal and whoever they might pick up this offseason besides them get a chance at it. But the back end of that bullpen with Carlos Martinez moving either to the rotation or to another team, depending on how you look at it, the back end of that rotation, that bullpen is kind of in flux. And finding guys, finding middle relievers is one thing. Finding eighth and ninth inning guys is something else. And it's kind of dangerous to go looking for that now in the free agent market, isn't it?
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, it just seems like every time they've done this and they've rolled the dice, it's just, you know, you come with craps. So that's it's a scary proposition. I think everybody's kind of looking forward to it. If you think about these good bullpens that build themselves, a lot of the internal options usually work out the best or names that that, you know, are, you know, just in passing these deals that turn out to these guys. I mean, I thought Myers did. I thought he found his niche last year in the bullpen, and you know, he was a completely different arm. I mean, you and I had the had that long conversation about how he just didn't have a fit with the ball club anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he comes and does this. I read an interesting article today that I don't know who it was for, but, you know, Josh Hader was traded to the Astros at one point. And I'm trying to think of in what deal that was made before he actually made it to Milwaukee. And it's one of those to where you just never know. And that's why it's tough just to give that money out to build, you know, those bullpens.
Yeah, because, and let's see, Hader was drafted by the Orioles, traded with the Orioles to the Astros for Bud Norris.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. That's okay. That's yeah. What somebody pointed out.
And then the Astros traded him to Milwaukee with three other guys. For Mike Fears, Carlos Gomez, and Cash. So July 30, 2015, he's probably, although Brett Phillips, I know, and Domingo Santana and Adrian Houser were the other ones that went with him. But yeah, I mean, when you start paying for relievers, you're paying for what they've done. And basically, almost every reliever has like a 3-year window where they're really good.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're paying for what they've already done, they've already had one of those good years, you know, at least maybe two. You know, guys last a long time. I pull up the free agent list, and I mean, John Axford is on that list. It's been forever since he's been a Cardinal. Matt Belisle, who used to be a Cardinal, mm-hmm. on that list. Blaine Boyer used to be a Cardinal briefly. I mean, there's guys that have done it. But they're not guys that you're going to put at the end of the rotation. Although Joe Kelly is a free agent. Maybe we should look at that. You know, I don't know. I just don't see, when you look at this list, there's not just this, oh, you got to go get him. In fact, sadly, the most notable name on here could be Greg Allen.
Well, it's that. Now, let me ask you this. I'm a little confused. What list are you looking at?
Because MLB Trade Rumors, 2018-19 MLB Free Agents.
Well, one of the names I've circled, and this may have been one that was good 3 years ago, I don't know, is Andrew Miller. And I'm pretty sure that his contract runs out this year.
Miller does not show up on the Trade Rumors things. Let's pull up baseball reference. And see what it says.
Signed through 2018.
Yeah. Huh. He may have an option. Well, no, because even that would show on there.
Yeah. So that's one of those to where I thought, you know, you talk about a guy that can get lefties out and can get righties out. Go ahead.
No, let's look at that. It says signed through 2018, but it says early free agent 2019. That's interesting. Maybe that's just one that's missing off that list. Yeah, I mean, you know, he'll be 34 this season coming up. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. Don't worry about that at all, because I was going over that myself. I had in our group chat the other day, it was we kind of had some pushback on the same thing as well. And like I said, I knew that there was interest in the past, and I may be two years late, you know, from getting the dominant reliever that you wanted to with him. And he's actually pitching on bad knees. So we don't know how bad it is. But that's when we had talked about guys that have proven to do the job and there's a little bit of certainty. I don't know if it gets any better than Miller. If you're going to roll the dice on one of those, on a deal like that, you know, somebody could probably dig through the stats and maybe point out someone better. But just being a 6-7 dominant lefty that you know, can go multiple inning stints and has been the best reliever on several teams that were really, really good, he's somebody that piques my interest.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, and I apologize. I did not scroll far enough to have the lefties underneath.
Oh, okay.
So he is listed there along.
Well, I thought I was wrong on the date, to be honest with you. I was like, ah, crap, you know, because I had just about – I was actually doing some research on some on a couple posts I want to do, and he's one of them. So I was like, ah, here we go.
No, and Zach Britton is down there as well, which might be
– No, that would be interesting.
An interesting one as well, assuming. But anyway, yeah, I mean, you look at Miller's last few years, and you know, the ERA is well under two, usually under 1.5. You have to go all the way back. I mean, ERA for a reliever, again, not the best measure. Mm-hmm. But you know, you have to go all the way back into 2012 to get a 3.35. Before that, he struggled, but then this year, yeah, 4.24. How much injury, how much is catching up, how much is, you know, just a wear and tear. He pitched 34 innings this year, which is kind of in line, a little bit less than what he's pitched like last year, but in line with some other years. That'd be interesting for you when you flesh that out. I could see that. I also could see him being one of those guys that gets overpaid and, you know, the bottom falls out.
True.
Just because of everything. I'm not saying that it will, unless he signs with the Cardinals, and he probably will.
Yeah.
It seems to be the way that they go with these things these days. But I don't know. The bullpen is going to be... I mean, the whole pitching staff in general. I mean, you've got the young guys, you know, Jack Flaherty looked very good. He kind of hit the wall in September, but you figure he's coming back. He's got to be able to get through at least 6 innings on a regular basis, it feels like. And he's not... That's the step he needs to take in this offseason.
Sure.
Either cut down on the strikeouts of his pitch count, or, you know, more likely, try to get a little bit more command, throw a few fewer balls. And then you have, you know, what are you going to do with some of these other guys? Where does Ponce de Leon fit in? Where does Gomber fit in? Lots of questions, and it feels like, you know, Miles Michaelis pitched like a veteran this year. And if he can do that again next year, maybe you don't worry about it. But it still feels like you'd like to have... I'm not talking Clayton Kershaw. I mean, obviously anybody would like to have Clayton Kershaw, but I'm not talking about going out and trying to chase him down so he can exercise his option and be a free agent. But just, you know, some middle-of-the-order kind of guy that you know can give you 7 innings every night and give you, you know, 7 innings of 3 runs or something like that, which maybe that's a lot to ask this time of in this kind of thing. Or, hey, guess what? Lance Lynn's a free agent. So, yeah, maybe that's where you go from. Uh-huh. David Price can opt out of his remaining contract, although it would seem unlikely that he would do so. you know, there's lots of interesting names, but how many of them fit with the Cardinals, and how many are the Cardinals going to really chase down? And again, what happens? Wait, Dallas Keuchel is a free agent?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
But anyway, so...
Keuchel is from a great, great city as well.
Well, he went
does
to...
It doesn't get any better than where he's from.
I don't know about that, but I do know... That
he's a Tulsa, Oklahoman, by the way.
Yeah, he went to a very, very good college.
The education.
Yeah, education is top-notch for the former Razorback. Keuchel would be fun. And I could... even with all the arms that the Cardinals have, you can make that argument. I would think that they could be players. They should be players in there. But, you know, we'll kind of transition maybe a little bit here. The offense needs something. We've talked about this a lot. There's a lot of good players. There's a lot of decent players. There's also a lot of places where you can upgrade.
Yeah.
And the biggest upgrades, as everybody knows, are Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. And I'm pretty sure almost 75% of our audience just dismissed it and is ignoring anything we say from now on because they're convinced that the Cardinals aren't going to sign them. And they're probably right. I'm going to be fair. I do not expect the Cardinals to sign either one of these guys. I do think, though, that the Cardinals may look and say, this is our once every 10-year opportunity to do something huge, to get a core player we cannot develop, and a guys that are at the end of 10 years could still be very valuable. I mean, these are guys that are, what, 26, 27? You know, it's not like you're trying to sign a 32 or 33-year-old to that kind of deal. It's not Albert Pujols' 10-year deal, you know, because you knew when Albert left St. Louis, when the Cardinals were trying to sign him there, and you were like, boy, the end of that contract's going to be ugly. Well, you know, maybe the end of a Machado contract or maybe the end of a Harper contract will be ugly, but there's a good chance it's not. It's a good chance that they'll still be very productive at the end of this, the end of 10-year contract, assuming they get a 10-year deal, and maybe they get more than that, and who knows, but you know, this is the Cardinals' chance to lock up that face of the franchise, that organization core, that guy that they're going to build around for eons to do that. Now, is that going to be enough to sway them? Is that going to be enough? And you've got a good point. You just don't think, even if the Cardinals give him, pull the truck up to his house, you're not sold that Manny Machado is going to show up in St. Louis.
That's my biggest issue with that, because I think the fit would be perfect. But if I was to pick, if we're talking about Machado and Harper, I could see Harper in St. Louis before Machado. I think that, I know this is going to sound stupid, but I think he's going Hollywood. I think he's going one of the coasts. And he's either going to stay in L.A., which I've heard things that L.A. may not necessarily want that, which is another concern that I've had that I've said on the show before, is, I think his numbers would surpass a lot of the things that I think will go bad. But I think at some point, Machado would not play well in St. Louis, and I'm not saying on the field. I think that there would be issues that would not set well with Cardinals fans, because he does not run out a lot of ground balls. He takes plays off defensively, but he's also 35 home runs and, you know, an 850 plus OPS every year. So that's going to be, you know, that gets ignored quite a bit. But I do think this next step is going to be a lot of money. We know that, but I think it's going to be a lot of spotlight as well. I think that a sleeping giant in one of these moves is, I think, the White Sox are going to sell Chicago on somebody. I could see it being Machado. I could also see them overpaying, but I think it's going to be a huge market where he goes. I don't know if the nostalgia and history of St. Louis is something that's going to suit him, and maybe the city's not going to suit him. I don't know. That's the one where I would almost prefer to have that. Have the Machado as a player. I would be really surprised if he would have St. Louis as a home.
I think that's fair, and I think, you know, obviously it depends on it. Neither one of them may want to play in St. Louis for the same type of reasons that Giancarlo Stanton didn't want to play in St. Louis. That said, just, again, it's nothing based on the little bit that he's seen and a little bit of articles that you hear. You know, Harper may be that baseball lifer type, you know, the one that just, he wants to play ball, and if you throw him enough money, he's going to play wherever, assuming he can play and play on a contender. And Machado may need some of that other stuff, and that may just be, I mean, we don't know these players. I mean, I could be completely reading the situation wrong. I'm going to say, be fair, I've not seen anything like that, but you're right. It feels like, and of course, the Yankees have been tied to Machado for a long time. They've been tied to Harper for a long time.
Sure.
They're not getting them both, I don't think, because I don't think they want to pay all the tax money that goes along with that.
No.
And Harper becomes an issue for the Cardinals, because then you know, this outfield is already full. We've talked about this numerous times, even with the trades that happened. You know, you look at this, you look at the outfield, and it's Ozuna starting next year. Ozuna, Bader, and Fowler, because that's going to be Fowler's going to get a shot, and I think that's fair to give him a shot because this was really bad season for him, according to that article that Derek Gould, I think, wrote. You know, talking about it, how he, you know, really legitimately almost lapsed into depression. The slow start coupled with, however, the managerial issues. I mean, it just kind of spiraled him to a place that wasn't very good, and he started to look like he was starting to come out of it. I think they give him some rope next year, assuming that's where we're at right now. But then you've also got Jose Martinez, who we have seen needs to play outfield. Well, he needs to play DH, but if he's going to be in second place, he needs to play outfield. And then you got Tyler O'Neill, and then again, you're still looking at Randy Arozarena. You're trying to figure out what to do with, because, oh, you got to feel for the guy. You got to hope that Adolis Garcia gets a chance to do something else in the majors besides fall on his face on a key run. You know, all those guys are in that mix. Plus, you've got guys coming up like Lane Thomas. You've got a little bit farther down, you've got like Dylan Carlson. I mean, there's a lot of outfielders that are in the stock. So you go, okay, why should the Cardinals spend the money for an outfielder when they've got all these guys? But it just feels like that's the best shot they have to transform this team.
Yeah, that's, and I thought about that. I mean, it's easy just to say, hey, so go get them and figure out the rest. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you've got to sell incredibly low on some of these guys, but I don't know. O'Neill is a big key. You know, that's another one that we talked about. There's a lot of pieces to fit. You want to say that no outfield's ever too full for a Bryce Harper, but you know, in order to make that happen, and I do honestly, I think the Cardinals will be linked heavy with he and Machado, which I think almost everybody would. But I think that the Cardinals are honestly a financial sleeping giant on one of these guys. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this would be the year that they're going to do it, but something's going to happen. You know, they're going someday or sometime soon, they are going to go get one of these guys. And when you look at this is the class that everybody's had circled that they want to get. But it would take a lot of work to figure out how it would all fit if they were to bring in another outfielder. And that's trading Fowler with a no trade clause. That's you're going to trade Martinez. And I'm afraid that Martinez is going to fit into that category of traded for the player's best interest. And I think that Martinez is a good guy to fit into that, but that also means you're selling low a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So that's, I don't know how much immediate help that would bring the big league club, other than maybe addition by subtraction defensively, you're going to get better. But there does seem to be a lot of work if they are going to be in the Harper pool, and that's what makes me think that the Machado is probably the more realistic rumor, not realistic, but the heavy rumor we'll hear is because the pieces fit a little bit better with Machado. So it's going to be exciting. I mean, we talked about it last year where we thought we have all kinds of activity. They did. It was a little underwhelming, but it's not like we felt like, you know, Stanton was as big as it got last year, and they seemed to be down to the wire with that, and it didn't happen. And you got the second best player that you assumed was available, because I'm not so sure Yelich was at that point.
Right.
But I think that's what they got, and that kind of wrapped up the offseason last year. I think that a certainty is a word you're going to hear out of me a lot, because I think that they're going to go for certainty in what they get. Mm-hmm. So if you don't land a Harper and you don't land a Machado, I think Donaldson's probably the next name on that list. And that's one of those where nothing's ever been confirmed, but I still think there's enough smoke to know that there's been plenty of interest in that in the past. Why they didn't go at the deadline and get him, I wonder if health was an issue in that situation. Well, he's proven that he can hit. So that may be enough to show that, hey, let's bring him in for 3 to 4. and maybe overpay on those deals. But I do think they are going to get some certainty in the three spot. And I honestly think that they have a lot of hope for an OBP mashup of Carpenter and Fowler in front of Mashers being in the third spot in Ozuna. And, you know, I can't really argue with that. I would love to see Fowler bounce back. It's just it's hard to blame it all on Matheny at this point when he was having such a bad season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he came out of it a little bit with Shield that about a week or 2 weeks that he got to play before he got hurt. You know, maybe he could have continued to hit, but you're right. I think it's difficult to say it's all there. You know, maybe a fresh start helps. I mean, it can't hurt anything, except for a lot of people on Twitter.
yeah.
But, you know, I think you're right. I think we've seen a lot of comments recently from John Mosella talking about how they still envision that OBP lineup. And then big guys, you know, if Ozuna's healthy all year, you put that behind them and, you know, maybe you score some runs. But again, what you're saying, certainty, that's a lot of ifs. That's if Fowler can come back around. That's if Matt Carpenter isn't the guy that was at the beginning of the season or the end of the season, but more the guy in the middle of the season. And again, we'll talk about Carpenter some other time. I'm sure, you know, how you look at him going forward. But, you know, you got to – and then it's if Ozuna can stay healthy, because, you know, if Ozuna's not going to have surgery on that shoulder this off season, what, you know, can he rest and rehab enough that he's going to hit like he did in September? Maybe, hopefully, that's what you want to believe. But again, that's not, and I mean, nothing's certain in baseball. You know, just as soon as you go out and sign a guy, well, you know, that's been dominant for 3 or 4 years. You know, he comes into St. Louis and seems to not do anything. That seems to be the way things have gone as of late. And so it's very difficult to find certainty. But you can get closer to it than others. And right now, the lineup has a lot of ifs to it. And adding a Harper or a Donaldson or a Machado should give you a lot more of that certainty. Donaldson still, he had a, you know, good 16 games with the Indians. Is he able to come back? I mean, he's 32. I think you're right. I mean, if 33, if you go and give him a 3-year deal worth, maybe you give him even crazy, go $30 million a year for 3 years. You know, I think you'd rather do that than $25 million a year for 5 or 6 years.
Sure. And that's, you know, a short-term deal like that makes you feel a lot better about some of the money that they're going to have to pay with some of these up-and-coming guys whenever. I mean, they're probably 4 or 5 years away from a real true payday with any of the studs they have coming up. And that, by, you know, you've got a lot of time on that. But there is going to come a time where you're going to have to make the decisions on who you want to keep. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And that's why I think Donaldson fits a lot. Now, what worries me, well, I don't know. It worries me and I kind of play both sides on this. If he just destroys and he just crushes in this division series and makes himself a lot of money, and Cleveland's really good and has a chance to go to a league championship series, well, his stock's going to rise. I think that's a good sign for the Cardinals, to be honest with you, to where I was thinking, is he going to price himself out? But I don't know if you can truly price yourself out in this market right now, because you have two guys that understand that maybe $300 million. And, you know, it's amazing to me that we're talking about this like Donaldson's a second tier, which he is, but he's a superstar. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be huge for the Cardinals if you could get him 3 years. And you're right, you said 30, which made me feel better, because I was almost afraid to say 20 per. But yeah, that seems pretty realistic for those numbers. And even if he bounces back close to career norms at 33, yeah, you're probably at the end of your peak. But, you know, that's what they need. They need somebody that they know is going to hit, not completely fall off the map. They're in particular hitting third. And it would work well, very well, I would think, if that was to fall into their lap.
Yeah. Yeah, I you know, and again, they've been linked to him a lot. good possibility. I know they. It's just why it was very stunning that they didn't claim him when they had the opportunity, especially for a low amount. Because, again, if nothing else, you get him into St. Louis, you get him interested, you get a chance to negotiate with him early. Not that he would necessarily do that, but, you know, he knows what St. Louis is about. And I know that's not, you know, we know how well the sign and trade thing has worked, or the trade sign thing has worked for the Cardinals as of late, you know, with Jason Hayward and others. But it really feels like you're never going to be able to sell the city. You're never going to be able to sell the atmosphere. You're not going to be able to sell the team and the organization without getting a player in here to experience it firsthand. Because, you know, you can try to tell them all about what St. Louis is like, what this fan base is like, what this place is like. And some of them get an idea because they've come through and played, although I don't, you know, Donaldson, he might have gotten, I guess he got a couple of games last year, right, when the Blue Jays came through. But, you know, they don't really know it. And 16 games wouldn't necessarily be enough to get that feel either, but at least it gives you a foot in the door. And I'm surprised that the Cardinals didn't take that, because even if he didn't help them for the, even if he didn't help them in that push, you know, if they're looking to next year, which they should have been even then, even as they tried to make the playoffs, they should have been looking for next year. It feels like whatever that was, $2-4 million was a small price to pay to have a chance at him later. But, you know, and we could talk a lot about John Posehlock's moves over the last little bit. I mean, you look at Luke Voit winning Player of the Week for the American League and just going nuts after being traded to the Yankees. And you look at Tommy Pham, who hit well in Tampa Bay, although anytime you give Tommy Pham a chip on his shoulder, he's going to go off. And again, you look at Greg Holland, who looked like the guy that the Cardinals wanted to pay, even though they were still paying him, I guess, while he was with the Nationals. I mean, 2 runs in 20-something innings. I mean, he looked really good. You know, and Tara and I talked about this a little bit, too. You know, where is it clubhouse chemistry? Where is it, you know, selling low on a guy? Where is it not necessarily understanding what you have? Where is it opportunity? Again, you know, Pham got traded to free up spot for Bader. Voit really didn't have a spot in St. Louis. You know, you could look at Steven Piscotty and Randall Krichik. I mean, you got some different things there. I don't know. I mean, it's just, again, I don't think you can lay it all on Mo's feet, although some may want to. But it's fair to ask where that, you know, what is there?
Yeah, it seems like some of these guys are suppressed a little bit when they're here. I like to see when the guys succeed elsewhere, but I cringe a little bit about it because you know the backlash that's coming. I also think that there always has to be a whipping boy.
Oh yeah,
you know where Matheny was. I think Moe's going to fall into that. I think it's ridiculous some of the things that you're seeing right now because of that, what he's done since he's taken over. It's pretty special. There's no easy answer on the guys that leave and perform. I will say this, and like I said, somebody can filter through stats and probably prove me wrong. I honestly feel like a lot of the stupid base running ended when Pham was traded.
Yeah,
and I know that's minuscule and it doesn't mean much, but I think there's reasons why some of the guys are moved, and some of it I do think is to benefit the player. Some of it is space. I don't know. I mean, it's funny because I was really pushing for Grichik to be that fourth outfielder this year. Well, you may have one still in an O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out. I mean, you found Bader in the situation where that wasn't on the radar. You know, that's not how they figured it to play out, and it did. So I don't know. I think that there probably needs to be a little bit of soul searching to see where some of the guys are left to kind of flounder here and succeed elsewhere, or it could just be the absolute fresh start, you know, and things may fall, may go back to normal, and we may have seen a lot of the player that we thought they were here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's short span, and you don't know what they're going to do, but yeah, I think that's. There's questions that's going to be asked, and we'll see. You know, it's fair. And again, this organization still hasn't completely figured out. And I don't, and it's hard to say that now 4 years on, but you know, the death of Oscar Tavares still resonates. I mean, this is a guy that they seem to kind of have been scrambling ever since to try to fill that hole that they thought they had. And who never knows if Oscar Tavares could have been that guy that they thought they had, but they continue to kind of not really be able to go forward completely like they really wanted to, and it's sad to say, because you don't know how that's going to turn out. Lastly, thing we've talked about pitchers, we've talked about hitters, talked about the front office. I guess we can talk about the staff. There's an article out today that Willie McGee would like to return, which is interesting. I wasn't 100% sure when Willie McGee signed on for this coaching thing that he really, you know, and I think he'd probably admit he didn't really necessarily know what he was getting into. I kind of could see this being a one-time, okay, I helped, I did this, now I'm ready to go, and apparently not. Apparently he's very excited about coming back for this. Jose Oquindo's going to talk to his family. I got to say, I'm going to put 65% odds that he doesn't come back this next year.
Anytime you did it read like that to me as well. Mm-hmm. Whenever I read the article, the Gould's article about that, I thought the same thing. I was like, you know what? That almost sounds like, hey, this is Shields Club. You know, I pushed for him. I think they're in good hands. You know, my knees still aren't great. Never going to be great. It may be time for me to stay in Jupiter and work with the young guys. That's the first thing I thought about. And then in the pit of my stomach, I was thinking, oh, great. Now I can't – the pushback on how bad defensively, how much worse they're going to fall into a defensive lapse without him here, we're going to start hearing that quite a bit. So I hope we're wrong, but I kind of in the same boat that you are, that I think this probably means more to him not coming back than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, earlier in the year he said – with Mike Shield, he was more likely to come back than with anybody else. He seemed to be very impressed with Shield, and I guess if Shield asks him, you know, maybe very, very nicely to come back again next year, maybe he would. But yeah, I think, you know, they pulled Oquindo back to try to help this team. And it did for the most part. I think there's obviously still some lapses in places, but he
up
also,
the middle, they're really good.
Yeah,
I think he had a big part of that. Now on the corners, not so much. But go ahead.
Well, and there's only so much you can work with.
It's very true. Very true.
You can't turn straw into gold for the most part. And he may feel like, yeah, the fundamentals are covered with these guys. There's only so much I can do about it. And he's kind of talked about how he likes to, kind of like George Kissel, work with the guys in Florida, work with them coming up. And it's closer to family and all that kind of stuff. So if he leaves, it frees up a spot on the staff, assuming that's the only person that leaves, which is not a guarantee. I didn't realize Willie McGee had signed a 2-year contract when he came on, so... You know,
I didn't realize that anybody besides the manager signed long-term deals like that. I was caught off guard by that as well.
Well, I know Mike Maddox did when he came in. He signed a 2-year deal.
Oh, okay.
And I knew that because there was some idea that if they didn't get – if Mike Shildt wasn't the guy, if they brought in a Joe Girardi or somebody like that, they were going to have to be content with – Mike Maddox and some of these other guys, probably. I mean, you know, the guys could quit or whatever, but you could get them out of their contract. But for the most part, I think there was, but I just didn't realize McGee was one of them. But anyway, that would free up a spot in theory, and Stubby Clapp might make the major leagues that way as a coach. But there's still a lot of talk, there's been a lot of talk for quite some time about Stubby Clapp getting the Blue Jays job, and even John Gibbons, who was just fired from the Blue Jays job, recommends that they go out and get Stubby Clapp, a Canadian guy that knows the area, knows what's going on, knows the system, apparently. What do you think? I mean, there's going to be a couple other openings. I think Baltimore is going to have an opening. I'm not sure where else. Somebody else out Texas does, doesn't it? Is it Texas that has a new one?
Yeah, Texas, Anaheim, LA. Yeah. You know, That's all off the top of my head. Yeah.
But right, nobody got fired today, so sometimes happens. You know, so there's going to be opportunities. I can't imagine Stubby Clapp is back in Memphis next year.
I would be really surprised if that's the case. If he does make it through and doesn't get a job somewhere, I bet he's on the big league staff, and it'd probably be short lived.
Yeah. I think that you know, he's doing well, and mm-hmm. you know, I don't think that. I think if he can get a job someplace else, that would be good. Apparently, also Gary LaRocque is, you know, who's been the Cardinal farm director for quite a while. He could be in the running for the GM job in New York, which would then require a change over here. That would be interesting. I don't know that they have an obvious replacement. Gary LaRocque has done a fairly fine job, as far as I know, as being farm director. So that would be something else to look at as we go forward. Alan and I will not be with you next week, what is probably the end of this week, since this is being recorded Monday night, as technical issues ate us up on Saturday. but we're not going to do this week. This coming week, I've got my 25th high school reunion that I have to do a lot of work with, because I was planning it. So we've got that Friday and Saturday. It's off the menu for this week. We may be back with you the next week. Last winter we did the Cardinal, you know, favorite Cardinals, your favorite Cardinals as you voted for them, and we kind of counted them down throughout the winter. Without that this year, we may take a few more days off, a few more weeks off, especially when there's not a whole lot of Cardinal news. But we'll be back, even without, you know, in a couple weeks we'll come back and we'll maybe break down.
We'll probably find out the coaching staff by then,
right?
And there'll be things to talk about.
Yeah, and we may go back and really, you know, I'm going to write the exit interview series on the blog, which will actually be closer to probably November. But we may get back in here and kind of take player by player and just kind of see, you know, what their season was like. You know, what do we expect for them coming forward? And we may not do everybody, but we may do some check. You know, kind of look back at what we really got and talk about them. I mean, there's different options. If you've got any ideas of what you want us to do, if you've got some topics you want us to talk about, or thoughts of things that we can discuss, you know where we are on Twitter. That's AMedlock1. I'm C70. You can even meet me at Mutual, although we don't always see those as much. But hit us up. Let us know what you want us to tackle. We'll be glad to at least think about it, depending on where it comes from. If it's coming from Dennis Lawson, probably not, because who knows what kind of crazy stuff that or cards. No, you know, I'm pretty sure we're not going to get into the grooming habits of Cardinals or anything of that nature. You never know what those two guys might come up with, so I'm going to qualify it real quickly right there. But any reasonable thoughts and ideas that you might have for Alan and I, drop us a note. We'll see what we can do. Until then, again, if you're not subscribed to the show, subscribe, because that way you'll make sure you get the latest one dropped right into your podcast app, or however it works. I'm not technologically savvy. I just know that I subscribe to things through iTunes, and then I get a new one when they get released. So if you're not using iTunes, I don't know exactly how it works, but hopefully it's something similar. Subscribe to us. Follow us on Twitter, because we'll drop links when we do the shows. But with the winter, you want to be able to not miss a thing, hopefully, and join us then. So be sure to follow us somewhere so you know when a new show's coming down. So until next time, whenever that may be, I am Daniel, and that's Alan. Good night.
Good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!